Excellent.
Just interrupted me mid-sentence, but...
It's simple that I gotta do that, or you just keep going. You just keep going, you know? It's like a Wikipedia article, you know? Eventually, we gotta get to the references.
Steve, you know people come for the 45 minute of me just reading off every reference.
Yeah, but then I'm, you know, we're here for the afterglow. Like, they come, and then Ryan and I, you know, we fill it in.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hey.
And Ryan.
I am violently high off that.
I would rather be playing Oblivion than doing this podcast, just so everyone knows. It's not an offense to you guys. It's just, you know, such a
great game. Is it a good game?
It's fantastic. I mean,
I never caught the original, so.
Did you play Skyrim?
Mm-hmm.
So
I did. I just never played Oblivion.
So Skyrim did a lot of things better than Oblivion. Like it fixed things, but it also regressed a lot. But all the stuff that it regressed was like storyline and questing. That's mm-hmm. type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the traditional D&D like level RPG elements that are in the game, and that really all kind of went to the wayside for a more, like, action RPG kind of experience in Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
There mm-hmm. were better things in, like, the magic system and all that kind of stuff, but anyway, I could go on and on. Essentially, it's just the better version of Skyrim. Most people
so who Oblivion play is a better version, okay.
Yeah, but Skyrim is... I'm still a huge Skyrim fanboy. To me, it's like a 9.5 out of 10 every time. But Oblivion is... to me, arguably, the best Elder Scrolls game.
What is the better way to play? I don't want to know what the intended way to play is, but what is
what
the
mean?
Better way to play? Listen to me. Listen to the whole question. Keep this little question. Goddamn. What do you mean? I know that there
Fuck
is
you
an
mean.
Intended way that Bethesda wants you to play Skyrim, but what is the better way to play
I don't
Skyrim?
Fuck, I don't
first,
fucking... I don't
listen
know
to
Bethesda.
Me, listen to me. All first right. first
this
person
talking.
Or third person?
Bethesda just a hoe, she talking.
Because everything that Bethesda does in marketing material is first person, but what is the better way to play the Skyrim and Oblivion games, first or third person?
I think it's kind of like Rocket League, where you have to switch between cameras at different times, because it's just easier. Like, if you're fighting in a room full of people, you don't want to be in first person, because then, like, you know, two wraiths are wailing on your asshole and you can't see them, you know? So you go in third person, and then in the remaster, they have like an extended third person view. I don't remember if that was in the original one. So you go out a little bit further. So for that, yeah. But for like dungeon crawling, first person, all the way. It's nothing like it, you know. Turn all the fucking lights off, go into a random alien ruin, and just shit yourself. Gonna be great.
I might have to check it out now that GTA 6 is gonna be delayed till May 26, 2026.
If you've never played it, it is a fantastic rendition of the game. It's beautiful. If you like RPGs, it's awesome.
PC or PS5, what do I do?
I play console. I like the controller.
Okay.
It's a chill game too. Like, you don't want to be sitting at your computer all night. Or maybe. Anyway, so that was the Oblivion Minute with Steve. my guest, Ryan. The other Steve couldn't make it, but apparently he showed up anyway. So what are we talking about this week?
Yeah, you know, because you wanted to start early, and I didn't see the message because you didn't ping me. So
I was watching The Fable 2, which, by the way, is now on my Christmas movie list.
Well, today, Steve...
Ryan, you love The Fable. It's about an assassin who can't kill anyone. It's this Japanese, like, live-action movie of
I would just
of
be mad.
Oh, dude, it's so good, though. You gotta watch it.
He's, like, he's on vacation. He has to, like, take a break. So
yeah, he has to take,
like,
a year off.
He's pretend to be a normal
killing.
Person.
Yeah. But he runs into all these situations because of who he is. He's like this unstoppable assassin. It's really good.
This literally sounds like the plot to a Ryan Reynolds movie.
Nah, it's
yeah,
not.
Which I think they ripped off.
Like the Hitman's Bodyguard or some shit.
Nah, it's much better than that. He's like autistic. you know.
But this is definitely a Ryan Reynolds type movie plot that you're describing to me.
It's not, the movie isn't Ryan Reynolds, it's somebody else, but there was a Netflix movie that is essentially the plot of, it like has the same plot, but it's like different in a lot of respects, but like the same premise.
Gotcha. No, I mean, if we westernized it.
Yeah. Well, it's like black comedies, sitcoms, you know, in the 90s, right? Like, Martin didn't create a new thing, but he perfected it, you know?
Right.
Martin! Burp, burp, burp. How y'all doing?
But speaking of things that are far from perfect, I want to know...
Excuse me? I said Martin, bro.
Damn,
Gina!
Listen, Martin's far from perfect.
It was like one of the greatest shows ever.
It was excellent. It was up there. It was like a 9.5, but...
Bro, listen, I know you're hanging with Mr. Cooper, guy. You can just admit it in front of us. We won't think you're gay.
Listen.
It's fine.
Listen.
I mean, Steve is actually a big fan of Corey in the house, you know?
I was a huge Sister
black show.
I won't even lie.
I watched Sister when I was a kid. We watched everything. We watched all the white people shit, all the black people shit. We watched all the freaking Spanish shit. Yeah, I mean, because it was shit. Listen, it's not racism. It's just those shows were not marketed at me, but they were good fucking shows. So fuck you, you know?
I'm not gonna lie. Best show, Family Matters.
It was. Everybody knows it, you know, because as days go by, you know, it's the real love of the family. Okay.
And Urkel's
best role was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Too fast. Not cool.
Oh no! Chili dogs.
All right, boys. So today we're going to be finishing up our discussion of Steamboat Disasters.
Yeah, it's funny because Steve messaged me about a day or two after I put the first episode up, and he's like, "Hey, Steve, yeah, that was a one-parter," and I'm like, "Well, I already posted it, so we'll just leave it like that, and the audience will just be stuck waiting for part two."
Excellent.
And this asshole, he loves you guys too much, so he made part two.
I love the fans, you know. Steve wants to, like, he wants to nickel and dime you. He wants to, you know, he wants to take out the quality product. You know, he wants to fill it with ads.
I was going
to
take all the definite articles out of the podcast, unless you paid, like, an extra $1.99 on the Patreon.
There was going to be a Blue Chew commercial every, like, 5 minutes. And
like, imagine Spanish without un or una. You know, you're just saying nouns and shit. It would be the worst podcast ever. But for $1.99 a month on your Patreon, I'll put all the articles, all the definite articles of an end back in the game.
And then an ad for an Indian gambling site.
A complete
Here's Bengali Blitz.
Process. He is actually petitioning Squarespace to advertise on our podcast.
Yeah. Squarespace. Who the fuck hosts a website anymore, though, right? Isn't there, like, a thing about that? Like, that there's just... I'd have to ask my wife about it. But, like, how the internet is basically just four pages now. But back in the day, you had, like, you had 7,000 bookmarks. I prefer the 7,000 bookmarks. It was fun.
I really do.
Just running through GeoCities.
Yeah.
Oh, my fucking God.
Fuck yeah, dude. Going to, like, Metacrawler to search GeoCities.
Fucking homepages. Good
Trying
Lord.
To find those sweet Prodigy Mortal Kombat 1 codes that somebody posted on GeoCities.
Holy shit. Things that are just lost in time.
Yeah. Look to that.
Speaking of things that are lost in time...
First one we're going to be talking about is the Steamboat Victoria.
Steamboat Willie?
Yeah. In the late 19th century, London, Ontario had a population of roughly 19,000 people and was rapidly growing. The future growth of the city of London was guaranteed in 1878 after a new water supply was secured at the Freshwater Springs near the village of Byron, which is today a neighborhood of London, Ontario, on the
Byron River. Yo, who's president right now? Byron. You know what I'm talking about?
Jesus Christ.
If Joe Biden was here right now, what would you say to him? What's up, baby? Take me out to dinner. Hey, yo.
Hey, yo. Bing bong.
The construction of the hydraulic-driven pump house at a small reservoir on Chestnut Hill, today called Reservoir Hill,
led
to the establishment of... Waterworks Park, today known as Springbank Park, a long stretch of picnic and recreational area along the southern shore of the Thames River. The completion of...
Thames? You said London, Ontario.
They also named the river the Thames.
Oh, wow. God damn, they're lazy. You know, it's like Shakespeare concentrated all the creativity into himself, and they just lost it all forever.
So the completion of the waterworks that year, they built a dam at the park that had the effect of raising the water in the river upstream, and thus provided a beautiful stretch of some 4 miles of the park to be used for boating purposes. Collection ponds were built along the south bank of the river, one which still remains within at Storybook Gardens. Some enterprising locals took advantage of the boating opportunities in the river by establishing two boating companies, the London and Waterworks Line and the Thames Navigation Company. Small passenger boats were soon operating on the river, which ran regular trips through the summer between downtown London and Byron. A wharf was constructed beside the pump house as well. Its foundations are still visible today. Another 3 wharfs were constructed at the end of Dundas Street, at the Ward's Hotel and at Woodland Cemetery. The vessels operating the London to Byron route often had makeshift construction and lacked consideration of safety standards, having flat-bottomed, shallow holes to better accommodate the varying depths of the river.
It's such a British insult, you flat-bottomed, shallow hole.
So in the 1800s, you're telling me that these shipping companies and transport companies had lackadaisical safety standards?
Nah, we had the NTSB.
I know it's hard to believe, Ryan, but
it was all
true.
On the up and up.
I don't believe you.
It's like, I don't know if you saw, but like the current Schmuckosaurus, he freaking disbanded NIOSH. Did you see that?
No, but he also got rid of fucking PBS.
No, he didn't. He legally can't do that, so that's going to be one of those ones where it's like stuck in courts forever. Congress basically made it so that the president can't really do it directly. It's one of those things again, just like the Department of Education. You can't just dismantle the whole thing.
Can't get rid of fucking PBS, man. That's
I hate to give
honestly.
I hate to give big ups to like the old politicians, but I gotta do it. You know, at least they got some stuff done that worked in the future.
In July of 1878, the Forest City was launched, becoming one of the first vessels to operate the Thames under the Thames Navigation Company. She was followed by the Princess Louise, launched the following year in May of 1879. 3 days prior, the rival company, the London and Waterworks Line, had just completed trial runs of their own vessel, the Enterprise. In 1880, the Admiral, the first propeller-driven passenger vessel, also began operating on the Thames.
That vaguely sounds like a British insult. You fucking propeller-driven passenger vessel.
And another was launched the same year by the Thames Navigation Company, uses a small tug in the case of a vessel becoming stranded along the river.
Thames Navigation Company sounds like a nickname for some pirate group, you know?
Yeah.
That's the Thames Navigation Company over there.
Out of all the steamboats that operated on the Thames at the time of the disaster, the worst built was the Victoria.
did they do passenger transport, or were they like... passengers,
Ryan.
Okay.
In November of 1879, the London and Waterworks Line ferry Enterprise caught fire and sank during the winter, her burned-out hull slipping beneath the ice until the next spring when it was raised by her captain, Thomas Wastey. The hull was then repaired and expanded, being reused for what would eventually become the company's newest vessel, the Victoria.
See, it's bad juju right there. You're using the hull from a ship that caught fire and sank to fucking start the construction of a new ship. No. No. Absolutely
those
not.
Are, those, are, those are good. Get it out of those here. Are good. Those are good. Those are good hulls, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm good. Thank you. It's a bad omen, bro.
Got good guts.
It's Sony guts.
The Victoria
Civic. I'm not doing this. If you come and you're like, listen, it's Honda Civic.
What if it's an Acura Legend?
The body of it. You know what? I'll still use it because the Civic is a solid
car. What about an Acura Legend? I'm not, you know?
Would you wear that?
Or do you think that's more like Euro trash drug dealer kind of car, you know?
AccuLegend? I love AccuLegend. My first car was AccuLegend. It was a 1992 four-door sedan.
Like I said, like Euro big... trash drug dealer type of car.
Oh, shit.
It's a great car.
Slav squat for me, bitch.
Hey.
The Victoria, registered with Port Stanley, Ontario as her home port, was finished with a glossy white painted hull with royal blue engine.
Yeah, I'll gloss up Victoria. Yeah.
Royal blue and gingerbread trim. So blue and brown? That sounds stupid.
That's pretty shit. No, that's a pretty common thing. You know, like it's like a mint chocolate color scheme, which is like a teal with a brown, you know. It's pretty popular
with the skirts. She could easily cover the distance of Springbank Park within half an hour. She was powered by a 60 horsepower boiler, which was 14 feet in length, 3.5 feet in diameter, with 90 tubes. She was driven by a paddle wheel located at her stern within a paddle housing and equipped with a steam pump, handle pump, and inspirator to keep the boiler supplied with water. The engine was furnished by Mr. J. White of Forest City Machine Works, which sat on King Street in London at the time.
This is London, Ontario, not London.
Yes, England, London, correct. London, Ontario.
Jesus Christ, all right.
It was a single cylinder, 10.5 inches in diameter, 29 inches stroke, and fitted to a wheel crank. The shaft was 17 feet in length, upon which were the vessel's two paddle wheels, 10 by 4 feet each. The vessel had two decks and a hurricane roof, and measured from bow to stern at 80 feet, with a beam of 23 feet and a hull of 3 feet and 10 inches.
She's a big bow, she's got two dicks.
The steering mechanics were regarded as having been an improvement from the old system.
Shayla loves my dick.
With the pilot house on the upper deck being open.
Upper decker in Australia is a different thing. All right, mate. It's a lower deck.
Seating accommodation for 220 encircled both decks, with standing room for an additional 300 at full capacity.
Wow.
The height between the two decks was about 70 feet.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
The Victoria was launched on April 29th, 1880, and the government of Ontario had a proper and thorough inspection of the ship shortly thereafter, declaring her safe.
Doesn't sound like that went well.
The Victoria cost a total of roughly $5,000
to build. You name this episode Steamship Disasters. So it's not safe. Not completely. You know?
I'm sure they probably missed some stuff.
It'd be like watching a movie called The Murder of John Smith, and then at like the end, if John Smith doesn't die, I mean, God, who are you fucking with here, you know? He's going to piss off the viewer.
That's going to be written and directed by Quentin Tarantino.
The title doesn't mean anything, okay? It's a vibe title.
That's you gotta what do it, like the Jamie Foxx voice.
That introduction that he had in YouTube where he was being asked why he called it Reservoir Dogs. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a vibe. Just a vibe thing.
But the Jamie Foxx, where he does the impersonation of him from Django Unchained.
Jamie Foxx like does some banging impressions too,
and he's yelling at him. He's like, "No, you're not going to do that shit. You were." The Victoria had her own band, who were often aboard. Yeah. But in the case of them not being present, a piano had been installed on the vessel.
Yeah, it was. I think the Victoria band that was Cherry Pop and Daddies, right? Wasn't that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we never even thought about what that meant when we used to listen to them.
I mean, the record labels knew what it meant.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it. I was just like, I love this. This Zoot Suit Riot. Huh? Throwback about a little bit.
I actually listened to a history of it. It was just like a short podcast where they interviewed some of the people. They're just like, yeah, we came up with the dumbest name possible. And that was why they called themselves the Cherry Popping Daddy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
On Victoria Day 1880, a year prior to her sinking, the Victoria carried a total of 1,605 passengers over the course of the day.
Wow.
Collided with the Forest City on two occasions due to the captains of both vessels having a fierce rivalry and butting heads over one another's vessels being the fastest to reach the wharfs at Byron and London.
Bing bong.
So they literally playing bumper cars with the fucking steamboats.
For the 1881 season, which ran between September and October, the vessels running along the river were taken from their dry dock and renovated.
My vessel, right, is faster than yours.
He's going to have like a, he's going to be like, hey now, don't be saying your vessel's faster than mine there.
Yeah, he's Canadian, bro.
You're a fucking hoser.
This hoser what here thinks doing? His vessel's better than mine. He's mistaken now.
Now just say please and thank you and leave.
Don't want to upset the pea soup drinkers there, eh? So you better have that sign there in French, too.
Quebecois, the pea soup drinkers.
Captain Thomas Wastey, the owner of the Victoria, transferred ownership of the vessel to the Thames Navigation Company, who owned both the Forest City and the Princess Louise. On May 24th, Londoners were eager to celebrate the Queen's birthday, and as usual for the time, the Waterworks Park was a popular destination for both Victoria Day and Dominion Day. At 9 a.m. local time, the Victoria departed from London on her first voyage of the busy day ahead, heading south down the river. The crowd aboard was joyful and laughing. Children ran about the deck, shouting at farmers working along the shore and startling cows drinking at the river's edge.
Hey, farmer! You're a farmer!
Just being little shits.
Yeah. Throwing squashes at them.
As the Victoria passed under the Great Western Railway Bridge a mile from the city, the passengers waved to travelers aboard a Windsor-bound train. Another mile downstream, she was docked at the Woodland Cemetery Wharf, where several passengers disembarked to visit relatives' graves. Another mile, the Victoria stopped at Ward's Hotel, where London's young often gathered to enjoy cockfighting and drinking.
But it wasn't chicken fighting, right? Like, they were actually, like, you know, slamming swords, right? Meat swords.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, I was training for 6 months before I learned what cockfight was, and I was just like, that was a waste of 6 months.
I like it. It's good.
At this time of day, the passengers who only got off were a few of the tavern's employees who used the vessel for commuting. The Victoria then continued to the park in Byron, where Captain Rankin eased her into the jetty. When her passengers went ashore, the Victoria took another load of passengers in the opposite direction to London. Twice more, she made this round trip without issue. At 3:30 p.m. upon docking, in London, to stand by for a scheduled departure at 5 p.m., Captain Rankin noted that the Forest City had run aground on a sand shoal in the middle of the river. The Princess Louise was being used to attempt to pull the vessel off the sandbar by use of cables, which proved nearly impossible.
Off the sandbar. Off the sandbar.
Cherie,
Louise,
don't like it. Rankin called to the skipper of the Forest City, asking how long the vessel had been aground, to which he was answered that the vessel had been caught there about half an hour prior. The Princess Louise remained in London at the scene of the trouble to assist the Forest City, placing remaining responsibility of transporting passengers between the ports of the river on the Victoria, further overcrowding the vessel. Instead of awaiting scheduled departure, Rankin opted to immediately return to Byron to pick up more passengers, but not before trying to convince the Princess Louise to help ferry passengers back to London to no avail. Rankin and his crew made some attempts to tell those awaiting ferries at the docks that his vessel was overcrowded, but little concern was taken by those boarding the vessels, and the Victoria became overcrowded almost right away.
These tickets cost me 85 shillings.
Yeah, they didn't give a shit. They were getting on that boat.
You know how much maple syrup I had to trade to get one of these tickets?
You know how many loonies this cost me?
I'll die before I don't get on that boat. You know what? You just might.
You think this costs a loonie? It costs a toonie.
This costs a toonie.
Passengers were not worried about the vessel sitting significantly lower in the water than she should have. And many joked about the river being too shallow for any danger to occur. And nothing a previous apparent event where the Victoria had been grounded attempting to pass over a tin can lying on the riverbed.
What?
You heard him.
God damn.
John Drennan,
They don't make the these tin like they used to, you know. The back then, the tin can could take out an entire fucking steamboat captain, you know. A tin can was a weapon of war. Yeah, it was a weapon of war back then, you know. Nowadays, it's just, you know, whatever. It holds your beans. What?
They went woke.
Yeah, they woke
up.
It's
one of them they-them cans. It's not a he-him can.
God damn it.
John Drennan, a reporter for the London Advertiser, was standing aboard the Victoria's lower deck when he stated his concern over the rocking of the vessel as she sailed. A father who was aboard with his two daughters overheard him, remarking that even if she capsized, passengers would simply wait ashore.
Because they were listening to rocking, right? Like, they were listening to, like, you know, Quiet Riot.
Yeah, they had they had Twisted Sister on.
You can't do that! You can't do that! You're breaking boating rules.
We're not docking.
You said breaking the law, and then they put on Judas Priest, and they just started rocking out even harder.
That man's homosexual. This is double plus bad in 1880.
That man's a sodomite.
Oh, man.
Minutes later, Dreaded would see the man's daughters be swept under the sinking vessel.
Jesus Christ.
On the last voyage of the evening, the Victoria loaded her passengers at the Byron Dock. Many were eager to get home to London and opted to take the 15-cent boat ride up the
river.
The docks were packed full of people at the time. Upon casting out of the dock, she was already taking in small amounts of water in her hull, which washed over the lower deck.
Goddamn.
Passengers had begun to disembark even during the voyage.
What a stupid
Some of which, upon noting the dangerous rocking of the vessel, dove into the river and swam ashore. The Princess Louise, which had finally turned back down the river to pick up more passengers in Byron, passed the Victoria in the river, and the Victoria's passengers rushed to the close side of the deck, waving to those aboard the Princess Louise. This caused the Victoria to lurch close to nearly capsizing.
Hmm.
As the Victoria passed the submerged remains of the former Griffiths Dam, located near what is today Guy Lombardo Bridge, passengers noted that the water was ankle-deep on the lowest deck.
Guy Lombardo Bridge?
Yeah, it's a modern bridge.
Hmm.
Captain Rankin understood that he was going to be able to successfully return to... understood that if he was not going to be able to successfully return from Victoria to London, so he refused to take on any new passengers at the wharfs at both Ward's Hotel and Woodland Cemetery. The passengers were rowdy as usual, causing a steady rocking of the vessel. Rankin noticed a sandbar up ahead in the river, close to what is today Greenway Park, and attempted to drive the vessel into it to stop the voyage.
So he's essentially going to ground the steamboat?
Yes, he was intentionally going to ground it so that everyone would have to get off and then so that the vessel wouldn't, capsize.
I'm going to ground the boat, see, and everyone's going to have to get off, see. It's going to be wild.
He had barely made a move towards this decision when two members of the London Rowing Club decided to race each other down the river. Excited passengers on both decks of the Victoria rushed to the railing on the starboard side, which caused an imbalance of weight on the small riverboat.
Yeah, so you upon can't doing do that. So, you got to be careful.
Upon doing so, the vessel lurched onto her starboard side, and the passengers then ran to the port side, attempting to right the vessel.
That's not good. There's only one good lurch, and he's in the Adams family, you know?
The steam boiler tore loose from its mountings on the lower deck, tumbling over and killing passengers with scalding hot water on its way down.
That's a bad way to go.
Steve, why do you let me make fun of these things when these people are dying? You know, look at the people dying.
Look at Steve crying.
Oh my God!
He's always done. That fucking when that beat drops, you could drive a fucking. You could have everything going for you, and you would still just love to drive your car into war. Like as soon as that beat drops, you're just like, "Fuck life! I'm going to war." Oh my God!
My hands are tied.
Awesome!
It knocked out support beams on the railings on the port side, and sent the entire upper deck and the canopy cover collapsing onto the lower deck, crushing and killing more passengers.
Oh my God!
Many others fell into the muddy riverbed and were killed as the ship keeled over onto its port side. The vessel, now free of its weight of passengers, with her upper deck completely broken off, righted herself and sank, leaving the upper promenade deck floating and covering those underneath it, promptly drowning them.
So history's worst upper decker. That's what I'm going to name the episode.
Two young men who were swimming new to the river before the Victoria sank attempted to help rescue.
That was what you wanted to name the episode, but I'm not going to put that up there, okay? We're not naming the episode. Two young men who were waiting before they went to swim forward for the rescue of the river.
They were, Steve, I need you to go back and repeat that sentence nice and slow for me, because I feel like you just tried to skip over that. Did you say that they were skinny dipping?
Yes, they were swimming nude.
Two young men.
My hands are tied.
How did they try to explain that in the late 1800s? How are they explaining that?
It's the same way they explained that Gene and Finney are gay in a separate piece.
What's all really like, offended?
It's all they're like not gay in that book, but come on.
I feel like they really had bathing suits back then.
This is why I feel like you have an advantage over people when you've seen anime and you know all the tropes from the shows, you know? If there are two boys who have a really healthy relationship, there are women masturbating about it.
Yeah. If they 100%. Talk to each other, that means they've made out. If they ever like touch hands, that means that they've like had sex.
Yeah, like there's whole systems of perversion. It's so bad. But men do the same thing. They're like, oh, those two chicks would be pretty great if they made out, you know.
But these two young men, they attempted to rescue drowning passengers, but they drowned themselves in the wreckage.
Yeah, it's like one of the dumbest moves you can make is to rescue someone who's drowning, like yourself, without like you're supposed to tie yourself up or like you know to like a tree or something like that, because drowning people will drown you, like they'll just pull you under. It's one of the few rescue situations I'm well aware of where it's like, use a stick, do not go in there, they will kill you by accident.
It's so dangerous.
Other passengers swam ashore, alerting locals nearby or trying to pull people from the wreckage. By now, what was once the Victoria existed as a sunken hull and mass of broken wood and planks. The layered fashion of many women's garments became waterlogged, further making their frantic attempts to swim through the 12-foot-deep river nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Most people aboard the ship were also unable to swim.
Plus,
especially the...
Didn't they, like, bind their hands by accident in, like, their hoop skirts? And they were quoted as saying, "My hands are tied!"
God.
Most people aboard were unable to swim, especially the infants and young children tossed into the river.
The infants! You know what's funny is that actually that's not true. That's not true. We know that for a fact, that infants actually swim. There's a natural swim response.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole like Radiolab episode about it. It's really interesting.
Well, they were tossed to the river by like the ship like blowing up.
Yeah, no, I mean in this case they're not really tossed into the river. They're blown out like shrapnel from a fucking it begins with a C, a claymore, you know, it's a baby claymore, you know.
It's not like they're
baby
like,
claymore
you have to live for us, Gordy, you have to bring the cup home. And he just throws him in the river.
No way, I'm not gonna live, I'm gonna put some babies in a claymore.
I would rather think of a baby getting tossed into the river because of the explosion than a parent just willy nilly seeing that there was like a boiler explosion on a ship and just throwing their child like Steve Montana into the fucking river because.
Nah, they get like the rent increase and it's like 3 shillings more than they thought, so they just like wind that baby up like a football and launch him into the river. And the baby goes, "Why?" And the lady goes, "My hands are tied."
Oh my god!
I gotta pay the rent next month, so one of us has to go.
Those ashore quickly noticed something was wrong upon hearing the wails of the passengers from the river. Many locals attempted to assist in the rescue efforts almost right away, with farmers ashore being some of the first people to realize what had happened. Some had begun using horse-drawn carts to carry injured survivors back to London. by 6:30 p.m.
The horse-drawn carts were kind of rickety, though, right? Because horses aren't very good artists. So
it's true.
Especially for engineering drawing, like a cart, you know.
Yeah, by 60,
the horses are not good artists. Seals. Seal is actually a really good artist, though.
This guy that we hang out with, he's really wacky, right? And he told us this story about when he was in the red light district in Amsterdam, and he was at a strip club, and this woman, I guess painted something using her, you know, like a paintbrush.
No, she wrote her. She gave him an autograph using a pen
inside of her a vagina. And
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, now that's a good artist. You know, think about the control. I mean, Renoir.
He'd
break all his fucking paintbrushes and follow her.
Not just the Kegel muscles, but also the ability to, yeah, I'm assuming, pelvic floor, like flat-footed.
Yeah,
and also, like,
yeah,
right,
exactly,
like
bro. Yeah, like I do every day. I do a Malasana squat, like the yoga squat, and I do it for about a minute. I'm up to about a minute and a half, and I get all the way down. I keep my flexibility. You know, you can check your strength, but I can't even imagine the power you'd need for that. You know, it's just
occupational therapist just punching the air right now.
By 6:30 p.m., news of the disaster reached London, sending a stampede of rescue efforts to the Victoria.
Yep.
5 minutes after the Victoria had sunk, the Princess Louise came into sight, and her captain immediately grounded her ashore and disembarked all passengers.
Stampede!
The Princess Louise was turned into a temporary morgue almost immediately, and her decks were quickly lined with recovered bodies from the sunken Victoria.
Wow.
Mm.
Recovery and identification processes for the dead began that evening, and torches were lit on the riverside to light the area. Many of them find themselves reliving the dark reality of the disaster, trying to explain to others what exactly had caused the vessel to sink.
Dude, imagine trying to do this shit by torchlight. That has to be the scariest,
rough
shit
controls
in the world, bro.
It's just not as good, you know, as Diablo.
I'm just saying, like, so I...
Oh, yeah, that makes everything
just
fucking scarier. Like, the lack of light.
Just seeing,
they need
just,
to buy one of those Chinese flashlights. 2 million lumen, you know?
even seeing a dead body, like, in a brightly lit room, like $14.99, in a morgue or something,
so
like that,
fun.
Is very creepy. I can't imagine doing it freshly dead people after a tragedy like that by torchlight.
Yeah.
On a bank of a river. Like, that's got to be horrific.
You
got to
take LL Cool J's advice, and you got to, you know, doing it well, you know? You just have no confidence. Yeah, that's all it is. You just got to do it well. You got to represent Queens, babe.
Men worked through the night trying to recover bodies, and by 8 a.m. the following morning, many found themselves reliving. The Princess Louise returned to London at 10 p.m. with a cargo of 157 bodies. Men worked through the night trying to recover bodies, and by 8 o'clock, 8 a.m., they 18 more corpses have been taken off the wreck.
A lot of fucking bodies, dude.
And another four were pulled to the surface on May 25th.
I believe that's what you refer to as a grim task.
Oh my God! Yes.
Artillery pieces from the London Field Battery,
Ryan,
were fired
hospital,
over.
Right, so like, what's the most dead bodies you've ever seen at once? I listened to Dead Bodies Everywhere earlier by Korn, and it was such a throwback.
It was during COVID.
Years. Yeah. Like
that's
what's
all.
It's
bad.
Yeah, it's really bad, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy. That might be the craziest part about COVID denialism. The fact that there were fucking portable morgues at every goddamn major hospital, and like people were dying like left and right, and there are people out there saying that it didn't happen.
How's this? We ran out of body bags, so it was bad.
Yeah. Fucking ridiculous.
Artillery pieces from the London Field Battery were fired over the wreck with the belief that explosions would help break apart the vessel more to release bodies caught in the wreckage. This was unsuccessful.
Oh, no.
Yeah, over the... I'm just, like, shooting at a fucking hurricane to break it up. It's not going to be. It's not going to work.
Over the next week, rowboats with grappling hooks and pike poles probed the riverbed in another attempt to recover bodies. The dam at the waterworks was opened to allow the water levels upstream to lower.
Damn,
another
Gina.
Attempt to easily find human remains. Two more bodies were found this way. On May 25th, London would begin to bury the dead. The London Free Press reported hackmen raising their rates, liverymen charging $5 for 1.5 hours of service, and of draymen demanding various fees from grieving relatives.
Liverymen?
Yeah, okay. Liverymen.
Okay.
The funerals of 23-year-old Willie Glass and his 19-year-old fiancée, Fanny Cooper, were held from the separate homes, but blended into one procession on the way to the cemetery.
Those are some old-ass names, by the way. Like, those just sound like old-ass people, you know?
I see Willie Glass Fanny being 95 Holmes. Years old if I have to talk to him today.
The only person named Fanny Holmes in this country is some lending institution. And it's definitely connected with, like, minorities on purpose, you know?
And it's very predatory.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I just said.
By me, it's very predatory.
Not what you said, what I said.
The young couple were to have been married 2 weeks from the day of the wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Today in Mount Pleasant Cemetery in West London, they rest in adjoining graves. A single headstone supporting a tall pillared arch covers the graves. The inscription reads, "They were lovely in their lives," begins on one pillar and continues, "and in death they were not divided," on the other.
Adorable.
They can't all have been beautiful like that. Like,
no.
Like, one of them must have said, like, his wife died or something, and it just, you know, he's probably more like a gutter snipe, you know, and he just kind of says, you know, "the tits on her," and that's all it says on the gravestone.
It reminds me
of the tits on her.
It's just like, hey, listen, everybody says that their family member's in heaven. What do you think? Like, hell's just empty? Come on, man, be real.
It was difficult to find someone in London who wasn't affected by the tragedy. With the death of a family member, neighbor, child, or spouse.
Terrible.
A hastily formed committee of London citizens met on May 25th to plan a suitable memorial. John Labatt was present at the meeting. First plans favored a stone monument in a city park, but the needs of many families...
you said John Labatt. Is that a Labatt Blue fan?
I believe so.
You guys, really? Jesus Christ.
So he got everybody drunk to forget about the tragedy.
I was just telling my wife about the first time I got drunk was on Canadian beer. It was Molson, like, Canadian, and it was in, like, the mid-90s, so it was, like, the export version.
Yeah.
So it was, like, 9% alcohol, and, like, Jesus. I'm, like, 14, just, like, drinking beer. So I was so drunk that, like, we were straight up tripping. Like, I don't know what was going on. And I laid down on the ground. My buddy's like, "Dude, close your eyes. You can feel the earth spinning." So I did it. And it was like, wow, that's fucking cool. Then I opened my eyes and just immediately fucking horked. All over the backyard. Oh, my God. Jesus
Christ. That doesn't surprise me either.
Yep.
First plans favored a stone monument in a city park, but the needs of many families whose breadwinners had died in the disaster brought an end to this. One committee member commented, quote unquote, "The families of the victims are crying for bread. How ridiculous to offer them a stone."
Oof. That's a fucking quote right there, brother.
Some months later, money was raised, taken among the parents who lost children in the disaster.
Yeah, GoFundMe going, right?
To erect a GoFundMe, you know, and then they made it. It wasn't a scam, you know. To erect a small brick building on the grounds of the Protestant Orphans Home in North London. For 50 years, the cottage was used by the orphanage as an infirmary and later as a school. The stone above the front door carried the simple inscription, "In Memoriam, May 1881. The cottage would eventually be razed.
Oh, really? They knocked it down? Why?
I guess they're like, whatever.
I mean, you know, that's like, the thing is, whatever. Marcus Aurelius says that in Meditations, you know. At some point, you're just dust and nothing. Like, there's no memory at all. It's just gone. I mean, you know, that's the reality we all face every single day. Anyway, back to the podcast.
Oh my god.
the one in Middlesex Historical Society later erected a monument in 1916 at the site of the sinking to commemorate the disaster. Public outcry soon followed funeral and memorial processes, and the forest city was soon condemned. She was soon laid up at the dock in Byron and sat to rot. On June 1st, coroner Dr. Flock assembled a jury, and a proper inquiry on the disaster went underway. The case for consideration was the manner in which passenger Fanny Cooper met her death. Incredibly, the verdict never mentioned her by name or any other victims.
Fanny Cooper. She's my favorite character on The Wonder Years.
Instead, the jury declared Captain Rankin responsible for the wreck.
Captain was a pussy-ass bitch, though, you know?
With partial blame being later cast to George Parrish, the Victoria's engineer, who had passed the vessel as suitable for sailing at the beginning of the 1881 season.
As good she is. She'll take you right there, right where you need to go, whatever that is. What about this Parrish place? She'll go there.
Parrish was found to be guilty of neglecting to inform Rankin of the vessel's poor condition, and Rankin was as well put to blame for failing to inspect the vessel before departing that day. The jury was convinced that the boiler had been improperly fastened to the deck, and that the stanchions supporting the upper deck and the hurricane roof were too slender.
Stanchion! Made of pine,
not properly braced.
That was a Bill and Ted reference. It was Station.
Yeah. Their alien friend from Bill and Ted.
Station.
The verdict found little favor in the press.
That was my impression of a guitar.
I didn't say anything, Steve, because I thought you actually had a guitar. What of the harshest
criticisms? Really? No, I'm just kidding. God damn it.
What of the harshest public criticisms came from a Toronto Globe editorial? The verdict of the coroner's jury is by no means satisfactory. The death of Miss Cooper was entirely ignored, and it is impossible to discover whether the jury believes she perished as a result of carelessness or negligence of individuals. The capsizing of the boat is said to have been caused by water in the hold, a finding that, in our opinion, is very ill-supported by the evidence.
It was like a mystery theater thing. Someone walks in and goes, "Yo, Fanny ain't dead. Hey, Fanny." And she walks in. Like, oh shit, that's Fanny Cooper. Wait a minute, who died? Oh, that's Fanny Muckets. Oh, okay. That makes perfect sense. She was always trying to die. Case dismissed.
Both Rankin and Parrish were arrested on manslaughter charges upon leaving the courtroom and later released on a $3,000 bail each.
What kind of dollars?
Canadian dollars.
Enough.
So that's going to be like 500,000 U.S. dollars today.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be like $5 today, but like 5,000 Canadian dollars.
Canada doodles.
Got it backwards. The case came before the Middlesex grand jury at the Fall Assizes, which opened in London on September 10th, 1881. On September 22nd, the grand jury handed down its verdict, refusing to indict the men, freeing both Rankin and Parrish. The disaster made Londoners extremely reluctant to support the riverboat system in London, though vessels continued to run until the turn of the century. The expansion of the London Street Railway to Byron in 1895 aided in the decline, and after the flood of July of 1883, the first of the two worst floods in London's history, the Princess Louise was swept over Waterworks Dam, dashing her to pieces and killing seven people.
Jeez.
The Forest City was also damaged on this day, having been cast into the river while being laid out. For the next several years, riverboat services ceased. Many Londoners also stopped visiting the park, likely due to the combination of factors. As the city was growing and Port Stanley was becoming more popular for a swimming destination, and the sinking of the Victoria was still fresh in the city's memory. Because the waterworks was seldom used during the later half of the 1880s, the London Free Press ran several editorials in 1887 urging the resumption of riverboat transport to the park. In May of 1888, Captain David Foster launched two new steamboats, the City of London and the Thames. God, May 25th would be
like
the
goddamn person. Story of the Bright Line, you know? Just claiming souls for Ron DeSantis. My power's waning a little bit. Can we get a couple more deaths on that Bright Line?
It tastes blood, and now it must feed.
Casey needs to feel powerful if she's going to wear that cape. Now,
we're
give me
Catholic.
More cars.
We're very Catholic.
May 25th would have been the vessel's first voyage. However, this time around, and out of extreme caution in light of what befell the Victoria, Foster refused to exceed 300 passengers per trip. Unfortunately, this brief resurrection regular riverboat service was nowhere near as popular as it was prior to the sinking of the Victoria, and by 1894, the vessels were so overlooked that Captain Foster was forced to retire the City of London, although the Thames was able to continue service until 1899, when she too was retired and scuttled by Foster, just feet from Waterworks Dam.
Scuttled by Foster sounds like a design house, you know?
You know, I just got this new table. It's by Waterworks Dam.
Scuttle by Foster at Raymore and Flanagan.
Absolutely. Listen, it is disgusting how much like a furniture company you just sounded like.
I did IT for one for quite a few years. My God, are they full of fucking shit, bro. I can't even really say because someone could figure out what I mean. But, my God. Let me just tell you, if a certain store shuts down soon, it's because they can't get their shit from China.
So they're like they're lying? They're not made in America?
I mean, they're not lying, but let's just say they're not telling you up front, you know? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So ridiculous. I'll tell you guys later. It's so ridiculous. You have no
idea. The wreckage of the Victoria was mostly destroyed during salvage efforts for human remains, and remaining wooden portions of the vessel broke apart or rotted away. For years, the vessel's steel-plated boiler rested on the riverbed and was popular among youths as a jump-off point for diving into the river.
It's the jump-off! So just jump off!
It's that boiler that scolded all those people to death.
And then the boiler that sank that fucking ship, let's jump off of it.
It's a real boiler.
Let's flex on their souls for eternity that we're going to swim in the river that they all drown in.
One of the few reminders of the disaster is that of a blue Ontario heritage plaque, which sits with the painted anchor of the Victoria on the south side of the river at the site of the sinking. The plaque is located along the Terry Fox Parkway.
Terry Fox.
If you ever want to watch a 30 for 30 that's guaranteed to make you cry, watch the one on Terry Fox.
No.
The surrounding area where the vessel sank is today the West London suburb of Kensal Park and Greenway Off-Leash Dog Park, as well
Kensal
as the Greenway
Stingshire.
Wastewater Treatment Center.
All right, most of the I keep thinking Britain for some reason. I don't know why.
Most of the victims of the disaster are today buried in Mount Pleasant and Woodland Cemeteries, and the latter of which just so happened to be the last port of call of the Victoria before coming to its cold stop on the riverbed.
You know, they wouldn't have died if they were armed. I mean, that's the problem, is they didn't have guns to shoot the river, you know? You gotta stop it.
If you put enough bullets into the current,
you're gonna reverse the flow. I mean,
there's a Mount Pleasant cemetery everywhere.
Oh yeah. There's a Mount Pleasant everywhere, you know. Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
The Victoria Day disaster, the Victoria Day disaster today is a well-known event in history to many Londoners, although the individual stories of those lost in the shipwreck are mostly shrouded in mystery or lack of information.
Really?
In 2016.
Why would they be lacking info?
Because they're just like ordinary people, they don't
just
know much about them.
Just ordinary men.
Like... And it was in the 1800s, and it happened real quick. I'm surprised they even knew the cause of it at this point.
That sounded like the first two lines of a rap. Yo, with the 1800s, and it happened real quick. It And what the shit.
And everybody went for a dip.
And they went for a dip.
In 2016, we have Woodland to stop Cemetery. The podcast
forever. White people are rapping.
Steve just goes off the deep end, just becomes like Michael Rapaport, starts like lecturing black people on the hey, four Mom. Pillars of hip hop.
Hey Ma, there's a weird cat out there.
In 2016, Woodland Cemetery held a walking tour.
I was in Higher Slane. Learning, you remember that? I was Remy. Hey Ma.
The local historian Dan Brock for the 135th anniversary of the disaster. In 2022, various pieces were dedicated in memory of the disaster at downtown London's Ivy Park. Artists Gil Quillen and Brana Morgan painted a memorial mural of the Victoria, and musicians Jerry Kobayashi, Eve Thompson, and Mary Ashton performed pieces, and historical interpreter Dan Ebbs portrayed Captain Rankin.
Old Gil.
So they're still doing commemorations and
nobody's stuff. Alive, though. I mean, it would just be like old people that were like vaguely related to the original people at this point, if anything.
It's like old people that are there. It's like your great-great-grandparents.
I was going to say, because it's got to be, it's at least two generations, because it's like 1880-something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can't be anybody.
Yeah, this is a great-great-grandparents.
Yeah, this is my grandma Erkelston, and she's 150. I was on the ship, I was, and I'm right Canadian, even though Steve keeps giving us British accents.
I was one of the children that was thrown from the ship by my mother, and I got nursemaid's elbow.
People
swim.
Ask me what I thought when I was being thrown from the ship, and quite honestly, I was very aroused.
It's somewhere, Steve's. You're sort of going from like an English accent into doing like a Cosby.
I didn't fucking ask.
It's hilarious.
No, I was on the ship. It was me and Theo
and Rudy.
Rudy, and then I got the rape drugs out to give people some solace from their death.
You see, the thing that Steve invented is with the blippin' and the boppin' and the clippin' and the coppin'. No one knows what the steam engine actually works.
It's all about, you know? Anyway, well, these steamships will be around forever.
Now, the next ship we're going to talk about is the PS General Slocum.
This is the one we talked about in high school.
Yeah, Slocum. Yeah, I remember that. Slocum.
So the
we had a bowling alley in town called Slocum. It was such a great joke.
The whole of the General Slocum was built by Divine Burtis Jr., a Brooklyn boat builder, who was awarded the contract on February 15th, 1891.
Divine. What about?
The superstructure was built by John E. Hoffmeyer and Son. Her keel was 235 feet long, and the hull was 37.5 feet wide, constructed of white oak and yellow pine. The General Slocum measured 1,284 tons gross and had a hull depth of 12.3 feet. She was constructed with three decks, main, promenade, and hurricane, three watertight compartments, and 250 electric lights. She drew 7.5 feet unladen and was 250 feet long overall.
Hmm. Okay.
The General Slocum was powered by a single-cylinder surface-condensing vertical beam steam engine with a 53-inch bore and 12-foot stroke built by W&A Fletcher Company of Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yep.
Steam was supplied by two boilers at a working pressure of 52 pounds per square inch. The General Slocum was also a side-wheel boat. Each wheel had 26 paddles and was 31 feet in diameter.
Did they have, like, a spare wheel? You know, like a donut?
Yeah, they just have one on the back like a Jeep.
Normally we go about 6 miles per hour, but with the donut on, we go maybe one.
It's just dragging on the bottom.
There's no passing in this river, by the way, so you'll have to wait behind us.
Her maximum speed was about 16 knots.
Every morning I get on the fucking highway, and there's some dickhead in the right lane,
palm slap.
And they're going 55 in the fucking 70, and I'm just—it's always a different person, and I'm like, are you guys just scared? Like, what's going on? Everyone else is doing 75. Why are you going so slow?
All the time.
You know, and unless it's a fucking like window installer truck that says my speed is limited to 55, then like what the fuck are you doing?
The ship was usually crewed by a contingent of 22, including Captain William H. Van Schaik and two pilots.
Contingent.
She had a LEO capacity of 2,500 passengers.
A what capacity?
The legal capacity of 2,500 passengers.
Oh. So we're getting bigger than like the other steamboats that were like 300 and they were cramming 5,000 onto them.
Yeah, this one was actually built to accommodate like that many people.
Yeah.
Okay.
A storeroom, and machinery spaces were below the main deck. Crew quarters were the second compartments aft from the bow, with a hatch and ladder leading to the main deck. After the quarters was the quote-unquote forward cabin, also fitted with a companionway to the main deck. It was originally intended to be a cabin space, but it had been used as a storeroom and lamp room. The forward cabin also housed the ship's steering engine and dynamo. The forward cabin, measuring approximately 30 feet by 28 feet, was used for general storage and to store and refuel the ship's lamps from oil barrels kept there.
What do you guys do? What do you put up there? That's where we keep our generals.
Oil had been spilled on the deck of the lamp room numerous times, and it was frequented by the crew, who habitually used open flames in the room.
Oil, come on, bubble and bubble.
Idiots.
After the forward cabin was the machinery space for engines and boilers.
Oh, wait, isn't the Mighty Mighty Boston's guy a chud?
I think yes. So.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I think he formed a super group of like canceled musicians from who were kicked out of other bands for being like chuds and anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, it was like what's his name from the Beach Boys and
super sad, man.
The stern compartment below the main deck.
I don't really care about musicians machinery. Unless they do something evil, you know, because they're not selling us intelligence, okay? You know.
Mm-hmm.
The stern compartment below the main deck, after the machinery, was used as an after saloon. The forward part of the main deck was enclosed just forward of the companionway. To the forward cabin, the promenade deck above the main deck was open except for a small section amidships. The hurricane deck above the promenade was where the lifeboats and life rafts were stowed. The pilot house was above the hurricane deck with a small stateroom immediately aft.
Hurricane Megan.
She's coming up in a couple days.
Yep. She's coming, Hurricane Megan. Yeah, you never saw that? You never saw that? What was it? Onion? Is it an onion?
Yeah, it was an onion bit about Hurricane Megan coming through the Cinco de Mayo.
They have released the lists, and one of the names is Karen.
No, year, it's like I saw that too. But like the Hurricane Megan is like she's drunk and she's nobody wants to deal with her. You know?
Yeah. Local bars have already started boarding up their windows.
Gotta keep that Megan. Gotta keep that cunt out of here. Jesus.
General Slocum was named for Civil War General and New York Congressman Henry Warner Slocum. She was owned by the Knickerbocker Steamboat Company. She operated in the New York City area as an excursion steamer for the next 13 years under the same ownership.
An excursion steamer? Is that like a euphemism for taking a shit on vacation?
Oh no, that's where they take you out for like the monkey fights, like in The Simpsons.
Okay. Gotcha. Take you out to quote unquote international waters. We can get away with anything.
Yeah. It's all supervised by a Polish man named Jacek.
If you're lucky.
General Slocum, though, experienced a series of mishaps following our launch in 1891.
If you're lucky.
4 months after her launch, she ran aground off Rockaway. Tugboats had to pull her free.
She not ran aground on Rockaway Beach.
Lean back.
Yeah.
She didn't do the lean back.
I said
she
my steamboats don't Rockaway. Dance. They just pull up their pants and blow your block away.
A number of incidents occurred during 1894 as well. On July 29th, while returning from Rockaway with about 4,700 passengers,
Rockaway Beach,
General Slocumb struck a sandbar with enough force to knock out her electrical generator. The next month, General Slocumb ran aground off Coney Island during the storm. Passengers had to be transferred to another ship, and in September of 1894, the General Slocumb collided with the tugboat R.T. Sayer in the East River, causing substantial damage to her steering.
Sounds like General Slocum's not having a good time.
In July of 1898, the General Slocumb collided with the Amelia near Battery Park. On August 17th, 1901, while carrying what was described as 900 intoxicated anarchists from Paterson, New Jersey, some of the passengers started a riot on board and tried to take control of the vessel.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
That's a lot of fucking anarchists. Jeez.
The crew fought back and kept control of the ship. The captain docked the ship at the police pier, and the police took 17 men into custody. In June 1902, the General Slocumb ran aground with 400 passengers aboard. Passengers had to camp out overnight while the ship remained stuck. General Slocumb worked as a passenger ship, taking on excursions around New York City at the time of the incident. On Wednesday, June 15th, 1904, the ship had been chartered for $350 by St. Mark's Evangelical Lutheran Church in the Little Germany district of Manhattan.
Evangelical.
It is evangelical. Evangelical.
Yeah.
These are the crazy people. These are the evangelicals.
This was an annual rite for the group, who had made the trip for 17 consecutive years. Nearly 1,400 passengers, mostly women and children, boarded the General Slocumb, which was set to sail up the East River and then eastward across the Long Island Sound to Locust Grove, a picnic site in Eaton's Neck, Long Island. The official post-disaster report stated there were 1,358 passengers and 30 officers and crew.
Look at Eaton's Neck. Yeah. Doesn't it kind of look like this area on the map? Yeah. We'll call it Eaton's Neck.
Fewer than 150 of the passengers were estimated to be adult males over 21. Of those on board, there were 957 deaths and 180 injuries.
Steve's just dragging people here.
Less than 20 minutes elapsed between the start of the fire and the collapse of the hurricane deck.
Yeah. 957 deaths?
Yes.
You're talking about, okay, so
Steve, you're not supposed to say yes when he asks it like that. You're supposed to say, did I stutter?
Yeah, but listen, like, for reference, you're talking Jonestown numbers.
Yeah.
Like, Jonestown was 9-something, too.
But let's face it, you know, with Jonestown, right? Like, that was the Jim Jones thing with the Kool-Aid, right? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of those people, they kind of had it coming. I mean, they're fucking stupid. I mean, my God, are they fucking stupid.
I've heard that.
How do you get that deep into some stupid fucking shit? God damn.
These Lutherans, that they also called it the Weissnacht or something like White Knights.
White Knight.
Oh boy.
Because was that what they called it, Jonestown or whatever? That was his name for like when the government was going to come.
I think White Knight is what he did, you know, on internet forums. I mean.
It's crazy to me that they killed a fucking congressperson that went down there.
I was so worried about that one guy that went to El Salvador.
Yeah, I was like, dog, this dude's gonna get clapped.
I was so worried, bro. I thought he was done. He was done for. And then they were talking about another one going. I'm like, my God, this is the plan.
Fucking whatever his name is, Congressman Leo Ryan. He's like, oh, I'm going to go down and see what Jonestown's all about.
He sounds like a guy that dies in like a John Grisham novel, you know?
They're gonna say like, oh, do you want to look at an example of one of the cells they say in or whatever?
And he'll
step in there, then he'll just shut the door on him and walk away.
Enjoy it. Tell us how it feels.
All my problems started with the death of Leo Ryan.
The ship got underway from the recreation pier at 3rd Street on the East River at 9:30 a.m.
Hey, skate away.
It passed west of Blackwell Island, now known as Roosevelt Island, and turned east, remaining south of Ward's Island. As it was passing East 90th Street, a fire started in the forward cabin, or lamp room, the third compartment aft from the bow under the main deck. The fire was possibly caused by a discarded cigarette or match.
Yeah, fucking dictionary here. Oh my god.
The disastrous fire was fueled by straw, oily rags, and lamp oil strewn around the room.
You said this room was fireproof. I didn't say anything about the oily rags, though.
The first notice of a fire was at 10 a.m. Eyewitnesses claim the initial blaze began in various locations, including a paint locker filled with flammable liquids and a cabin filled with gasoline.
I'm just imagining, like, when you say blaze, I'm just imagining, like, a remake of this whole event with just, like, meth and red, you know?
Like, I'm not saying the escape. Room is flame retarded. Yo, we gotta get off this fucking steam shit, that you're rap. Retarded for smoking in the room.
Oh, my God.
Passengers on the main deck were aware of the fire at the entrance to Hell Gate. Captain Van Shake was not notified. Oh,
there's a fire at the entrance to Hell Gate? That sounds like a fucking Iron Maiden album.
Captain Van Shake was not notified until 10 minutes after the fire was discovered. A 12-year-old boy had tried to warn him earlier, but was not believed. After he was notified of the fire, Van Shake ordered full speed ahead. Approximately 30 seconds later, he directed the pilot to beach the ship on North Brother Island.
I asked him, are you sure? Is that the only thing that you can do? And he just looks at him and goes, my hands are tied.
Following this last command, Van Shake descended to the hurricane deck and remained there until he was able to jump into shallow water after the ship was beached.
Who the fuck voluntarily goes down to the hurricane deck?
I don't know.
Have you seen Van Camp?
Stay with the ship. What is this guy
no.
fucking...
I think he went down the hurricane deck.
Some he's supposed from to be there Philly. Until the ship goes down. Why is he getting off the boat? Get the fuck back on there.
Where it was beached, I guess it was technically down.
Yeah, he was already off the boat. He was on the boat. Is it off the boat or on the wagon?
He was definitely off the wagon, and he was off the boat.
Although the captain was ultimately responsible for the safety of the passengers, the owners had made no effort to maintain or replace the ship's safety equipment.
Off the boat, eh? What's your problem with Italians?
The main deck was equipped with a standpipe connected to a steam pump, but the fire hose attached to the forward end of the standpipe, a 100-foot length of quote-unquote cheap unwind linen, had been allowed to rot and burst in several places. When the crew tried to put out the fire, they were unable to attach a rubber hose because the coupling of the linen hose remained attached to the standpipe.
Can't do it.
The ship was also equipped
stuck.
The ship was also equipped with hand pumps and buckets, but they were not used during the disaster. The crew gave up firefighting efforts after failing to attach the rubber hose. The crew had not practiced a fire drill that year, and the lifeboats were tied up and inaccessible.
Look at that. One time they needed it, right? See?
One fucking time.
He just had to do it. You know, he just had to do the fire drill. Why didn't you drill? It was so easy.
What do we
do? Go outside.
What do we always say?
You miss math class.
Practice.
Yeah.
Practice.
Yeah.
Practice.
That's right.
Fundamentals.
What are we talking about? Practice? Not a game. Not the game that I go out.
Practice.
There.
Practice.
I go out.
So then when it's game time, it's just instinct. You just go.
Some claim the lifeboats were wired and painted in place.
I'm sorry, what? They were just paintings of lifeboats? What?
No, they were like wired up to the boat and they were painted over so they were hard to remove.
Yeah, they were like that. They had like over time that they had painted over them so many times that they were just stuck to the boat.
What kind of fucking booty tune shit is you painted a lifeboat on there and they believe it? Like, okay, yeah,
do you have the recommended number of lifeboats? I think you'll find we're well stocked. That's a painting of a lifeboat.
A guy runs to go to the lifeboat and he just slams into the painting and goes over the side.
I'm telling you, this is in my Method Man and Red Man take on the steamship disaster, like how high level comedy movie, you know?
They said five more men into it.
These ain't life ships.
It was painted on.
It's just some graffiti. Yo, we gotta get out of here, Red. But first, let's smoke this blunt.
That's how the fire started. They dropped a roach.
Oh shit! I would get high with Red, man. That would be amazing.
Nah, don't worry about it. This room, they said it's flame retardant.
Yo, you can't say that no more, meth. It's considered uncouth.
Survivors reported that the life preservers were useless and fell apart in their hands, while desperate mothers placed life jackets on their children and tossed them into the water, only to watch in horror as their children sank instead of floating. Most of those on board were women and children who, like most Americans of the time, could not swim. Victims found that their heavy wool clothing absorbed water and weighed them down in the river. It was also discovered that Nonpareil Corkworks, supplier of cork materials to manufacturers of life preservers, placed Nonpareil.
Okay.
Placed 8 ounce iron bars inside the cork materials to meet minimum content requirements. Which was considered to be 6 pounds of good cork at the time.
I'm sorry.
I heard she gives good cork.
I just want you to stop.
Era.
They put iron bars into life preservers?
Yeah, I mean, it'll float, you know?
No, the fuck it won't. An iron fucking what?
Yeah, iron's well known for being a floating metal. You know?
Oh, yeah, iron, well known for its buoyancy capabilities. Yes, absolutely. When I think of preserving life, I think grab onto a piece of iron in the water. It will surely sink and save my life, or right? Surely float and save my life.
Well, that's what they taught you in doctor school, right?
Yeah, every school I've ever been to, iron floats.
Keep some iron in the ER just in case. Somebody's drowning, you throw it to them, you know, it's there, you need it, you can rely on it.
Yeah,
it's like instant coffee, you should always have some instant coffee in your house, you know, the freeze-dried crystals.
Nonpareil's deception was revealed by David
Bro, you just reminded me, like, somehow that I forgot to mention this, but I did a software demo this week with a vendor, and every single company in the sample was a Seinfeld company that George Costanza worked for.
Jesus Christ.
And I recognized it, and I don't know if it's a sales technique or not, but he said, you're the first guy who's ever recognized any of the names in these things, like Play Now Industries, like Vandalay Industries.
Yeah. I forget what account it is, but if I get something mailed to me from a certain account, it always comes to my house as Art Vandalay Industries.
You say Vandalay Industries, and so good.
The deception of the company was revealed by David Conwaller's sons, who inspected a shipment of 300 cork blocks. Many of the life preservers have been filled with cheap and less effective granulated cork and brought up to proper weight by the inclusion of the iron weights.
Also, that's also, I think, known as bitch cork, right?
Canvas covers rotted with age split and scattered the powdered cork. Managers of the company were indicted but not convicted. The life preservers on the Slocum had been manufactured in 1891 and had hung above the deck unprotected from the elements for 13 years. Captain Van Schaik decided to continue his course rather than run the ship aground or stop at a nearby landing.
On fire right now. He decides to keep just driving on, just press on?
Yep. By going into headwinds and failing to immediately ground the ship, he fanned the fire and promoted the spread from fore to aft.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Somehow I don't think you've thought your cunning plan all the way through.
It's an interesting choice.
The investigating commissioner later faulted Van Schaik for passing up opportunities to beach the vessel in Little Hellgate, west of Sunken Meadows.
Listen, dude. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, I mean, like... Sometimes, you know, we all do it, right? You're walking through the kitchen and there's dishes there and you really should just take care of them, but you don't. And you wait and you wait and then it stinks, right? Now you got to smell it and you got to do the dishes too, right? You made a mistake. And some people, they fucking take ground steamships, you know? just is what.
Or that stopping at Bronx Bills east of the Sunken Meadows, which also would have put the prevailing winds astern, keeping flames from spreading along the length of the ship.
Fuck you guys, by the way. That was a good joke. Set up. It's fucking choice set up. It's great.
It's excellent.
Yeah,
it's excellent.
Just interrupted me mid-sentence, but...
It's, well, that, I gotta do that, or you just keep going. You just keep going. You know? It's like a Wikipedia article. You know, eventually we gotta get to the references.
If you know, people come for the 45 minute of me just reading off every reference.
Yeah, but then I'm, you know, we're here for the afterglow. Like they come and then Ryan and I, you know, we fill it in.
Then you're on the after show talking Troika, you know, with Chris Hardwick. And then...
Hi, Chris, how you doing?
It's He's me. Like, I'm a rapist, anyways.
You know, they say I'm the other Steve, but sometimes I kind of just feel like the other Ryan, to be honest with you.
Allegedly, I abuse women. I'm also married to Patty Hearst's daughter, so I'm really rich now, and I was already rich to begin with, so that's why I don't do anything anymore. Hey, guys.
I thought you were doing an impression of me, and I'm like, who the fuck is, why am I married to Patty Hearst's daughter?
No, I'm doing Chris Hardwick.
Chris Hardwick, yeah. Chris Hardwick's apparently a lunatic. That's what I've heard.
Now,
yeah.
if you were married in to Minecraft's daughter, I'd in be Minecraft. Like, listen, bro, I got student loans. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm almost done, dude. Oh, I can't wait.
Vanshake later argued that he was trying to avoid having the fire spread to riverside buildings and oil tanks.
Hey, yo, Vanshake!
Flammable paint also helped the fire spread out of control, driven aft mainly along the port side of the ship. Passengers who were on the upper promenade and hurricane decks were forced into the aft starboard quarter.
It's just a Seinfeld or a Simpsons episode. It's just like the boat inspector going, so you swear this paint's not flammable? And the guy goes, no, it's not.
10 minutes after the ship was beached, the fire had essentially engulfed the vessel. No more than 20 minutes had elapsed since the first flames came up from the lamp room. Some passengers jumped into the river to escape the fire, but the heavy women's clothing of the day made swimming almost impossible and dragged them underwater to drown. An estimated 100 to 500 died when the overloaded starboard section of the hurricane deck collapsed, casting most passengers into deep water, and others were battered by the still-turning paddles as they tried to escape onto the water or over the sides.
I didn't even think about that. Like, imagine you're drowning, right? Because you're wearing these clothes that are made of wool.
Sounds awful. You're, like, I'm not going to imagine that.
Like, these heavy-ass boots, right? And then, while you're drowning, this fucking dickhead captain has decided instead of stopping, he's going to keep driving. So now you're in the water, and that big, stupid fuck-off paddle is just pat, pat, pat. Hit you in the fucking head as it drives over you. Just add
sometimes that's what my work week feels like, though. You know, fucking phone won't stop ringing every 2 seconds. Everyone's got like the biggest problem they've ever had. Oh, it's the worst.
You're like half burnt to death, and just to drive the point home, you just get smacked in the back of the fucking head with one of the paddles.
Yeah. I can't get into my email, and I'm trying to reset my Newgrounds.com passport so I can watch Stick Fighter 47.
Oh, my God.
God damn it, Steve.
Little people you work with?
Huh?
Is that an email that you've got? Oh.
No, I made that up on the fly, dude.
I was going to say, dude, holy shit. That was I've been doing my job
for 27 years. I could write a book of ticket titles. Like...
The commission, this one guy
who would call people up, and when he asked to remote into their machines, he didn't think he was going to work there real long, so he would just fuck around all the time. So he'd just be like, all right, yeah, he'd be remoting in, and he'd be like, all right, I'm coming inside you now, and we were just up there, everyone would just look at him, dude, what did you just say? What, I'm remoting in.
The commission estimated that 400 to 600 people drowned after the ship was beached. As they launched off the aft portion of the boat and into deep water, those jumping off the bow landed in shallow water.
The General
Slocum remained beach on North Brother Island for approximately 90 minutes before breaking free and drifting east for approximately 1 mile. By the time she sank in shallow water off the Bronx shore at Hunts Point, an estimated 1,021 people, including two of the 30 crew members, had either burned to death or drowned. There were 431 survivors.
Wouldn't be out of place. just a burned out wreckage. Nobody would be. It fits right in with the
Bronx. World of burning wreckage.
No, oh my God.
Dude, I'll tell you what, bro. You want to have a good night? Take another one of those edibles. Go download Rotting Pinata by Sponge. It's a fucking amazing, amazing album, dude. It's a good album.
There were 431 survivors. The actions of two tugboats, which arrived a few minutes after the Slocum was beached, were credited with saving around 200 to 350
people. I'm just saying that there's probably two good albums in the 90s. One was Rotting Pinata by Sponge, and the other one was Live Throwing Copper, you know? And, yeah. Oh, and maybe, like, the Space Jam soundtrack. Quad City DJs, they did so well that they just never made another song, you know?
Come on and slam!
My wife has this amazing mix of that with, I think it's Rihanna. I can't remember.
They're still remixing? Oh.
Dude, it's an amazing remix, dude.
The 1904 Coast Guard report estimated the following figures for casualties of a total of 1,388 persons involved in the disaster. The total on board was 1,358, 613 adults, 745 children being the passengers, and 30 being the crew. Of the crew, two would die, and of the passengers, 955 were identified, were dead, 893 were actually identified, 62 were missing or unidentified. There were 175 injured and 228 uninjured. Five of the crew members were injured, and the remaining 23 crew were uninjured. The captain would lose sight in one of his eyes due to the fire.
I'm not good at statistics, right? But I feel like 23.
I'm just a simple caveman.
23 of 30 crew members being uninjured speaks to the entire crew saving their own asses and leaving the passengers to struggle, because out of 1,300 passengers, only 228 were uninjured. Now, I'm just a simple Southern nurse paramedic, but that ratio seems fucked. Seems that, a lot more of the crew, percentage-wise, were just fine.
Is that a job? A nurse paramedic? Is that a job? Like, I know you changed roles, but yeah.
No, that's literally what I am. I'm technically still a paramedic. I still hold my license, and I still work on a truck. Right. I am a nurse. Like, I'm RN in the ER.
Oh, I thought you were in the ER.
I am. I do both.
Oh, I thought you changed roles, though.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, like, you started a new, like, role. You posted about it on the internet.
The internet.
No, I thought you did.
I just got a new ER job closer to home.
Oh, okay, my bad. I totally confused it. I thought you like went back on like as like an ER, like an ambulance person.
I do. I am.
But you're a registered nurse.
I just moved to an ER closer to my house. I am still an RN in the ER, but recently I have also picked a spot back up on the rescue.
Oh, you can do both.
So now, if you have cards.
Juliana Margulies did that on ER. She would be on, like, the wagon, you know?
So now, when these frequent flyer patients that always come into the ER see my face, like, wait a minute, I thought you work in the ER. Not dickhead. Now you see me the whole way into the ER, and I'll take care of your ass.
Well, I couldn't deal with you fucking coming in anymore, so I had to get out in the fucking field. Figure out how the hell you snake-ass motherfuckers end up in my goddamn ER. Okay? None of you are getting any more hydroxychloroquine, okay? It doesn't fucking work.
It's how it feels. It's how it feels, honestly.
Do you know what ivermectin does? Problem. It kills you slowly. God.
No,
damn.
It's actually, hey, do you know what this spice shit is doing to you, bro?
Yeah.
Many acts of, reports indicate that Captain Van Schaik deserted the General Slocum as soon as it settled.
I just want to say
jumping into a nearby tug
is disconcerting. It's
along with several crew, he was hospitalized at Lebanon Hospital.
Lebanon?
Many acts of heroism were performed by the passengers, witnesses, and emergency personnel. Staff and patients from the hospital on North Brother Island participated in the rescue efforts, forming human chains and pulling victims from the water, and also used ladders that belonged to construction crews working on repairing the hospital building. 8 people were indicted by a federal jury after the disaster. The captain, 2 inspectors, and the president, secretary, treasurer, and commodore of the Knickerbocker Steamship Company.
Wow. For failing to uphold safety standards. Good. Fuck them up.
Most boatmen felt that Van Schaik was, quote-unquote, unjustly made a scapegoat for the resulting tragedy instead of the owners of the steamer or the effectiveness of the life-saving and firefighting equipment then required and the inspection of it by government inspectors. He was the only person convicted. He was found guilty on 1 of 3 charges, criminal negligence, for failing to maintain proper fire drills and fire extinguishers. The jury could not reach a verdict on the other 2 counts of manslaughter. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He spent 3 years and 6 months at Sing Sing Prison before he was paroled. President Teddy Roosevelt declined to pardon Van Schaik. Van Schaik was finally released when the Federal Parole Board under the William Howard Taft administration voted to free him on August 26, 1911. And that was Taft being on the parole board, it was president. So he was pardoned by President Taft on December 19th, 1912. The pardon became effective on Christmas Day.
It's a good album by the Distillers. Sing Sing
That's
Death House.
That's insane.
It's good stuff.
That's absolutely crazy, bro.
After his death.
Is it, though?
After his death in 1927, Schaik was buried in Oakwood Cemetery in Troy, New York. The Knickerbocker Steamship Company, which owned the ship, paid a relatively small fine despite evidence that they might have falsified inspection records.
Troy, New York sounds like a Guy Ritchie character, you know?
You say New York?
Yeah, this is Troy, New York. He's with the outfit for a weekend, or all, that's it. And we gotta get him back safe and sound. Oh shit, Troy got shot.
Is it like Nathan Detroit?
Yeah.
The disaster motivated federal and state regulation to improve the emergency equipment on passenger ships.
Well, that's good.
The neighborhood of Little Germany, which had been in decline for some time before the disaster as residents moved uptown, almost disappeared afterward.
Uptown?
With the trauma and arguments that followed the tragedy and the loss of many prominent settlers, most of the Lutheran Germans remaining in the Lower East Side eventually moved uptown. The church whose congregation chartered the ship for the fateful voyage was converted to a synagogue in 1940 after the area was settled by Jewish residents. The victims were interred in cemeteries around New York, with 58 identified victims buried in a cemetery of the cemetery of the Evergreen, and 46 identified victims buried in Greenwood Cemetery, both of which are in Brooklyn.
Yeah, there's a lot of Greenwood Cemetery.
Many victims were buried in Lutheran Cemetery in Middle Village, Queens, now the Lutheran All Faith Cemetery, where an annual memorial ceremony is held at the historic marker. In 1906, a marble memorial fountain was erected in the north central part of Tompkins Square Park in Manhattan by the Sympathy Society of German Ladies with the inscription, "They are Earth's purest children, young and fair."
They are the children.
The sunken remains of General Slocum were salvaged and converted into a 625 gross register ton barge named Marilyn, which sank in the South River in 1909.
What you get?
Again, in the Atlantic Ocean off the southeast coast of New Jersey.
Again?
Near Strathmere in Sea Isle City during a storm on December 4th, 1911, while carrying a cargo of coal.
You deserve it. You are just thumbing your fucking nose at God at that point. Oh, the metal from this ship has sunk twice? Fuck it, let's go for a third one.
All 4 people aboard the Marilyn survived the sinking.
Oh, God, they got lucky is what that is.
But one of the victims were the Slocum was Emily Ziegler, the girlfriend of a saloon keeper named John Fleming Schrank,
who later Emily Ziegler,
who later suffered a mental breakdown, culminating in an attempted assassination of Teddy Roosevelt.
Jeez.
Oh, not Teddy.
On January 26, 2004, the last surviving passenger from the General Slocum, Adela Witherspoon nee Liebenau, died at the age of 100.
Nay, Liebenau.
100? What was she, a fucking two-year-old?
She was 6 months old.
Wow.
Ah, okay.
Witherspoon was the youngest survivor of the tragedy that took the lives of her two older sisters.
Let me guess, when she needed money, she remembered it all very clearly.
And she was... When she was 1 year old, she unveiled the Steamboat Fire Mass Memorial on June 15th, 1905 at Lutheran All Faith Cemetery in Middle Village, Queens.
Wait, was that the name of the boat? The Fire Mass Memorial?
That's the name of the memorial. It's the Steamboat the Fire memorial. Mass Memorial.
It's the memorial.
It's like somebody, that's some advanced fucking, what's it called, Abbott and Costello there. You keep saying that the steamboat's called the Fire Memorial. No, before, it's the Steamboat Fire Memorial. Yeah, I know. That's what you keep saying.
Before her death, the previous oldest survivor is Catherine Connolly, Olmeyer, born in 1893 and lived till 2002, who was 11 years old at the time of the disaster.
Oh, I mean, that would be a little bit more like reasonable to be like, hey, do you remember anything?
She's 109, so she's just like, what?
Yeah, I don't even know why we got to talk about somebody who was a fucking infant when it happened. Like, okay, yeah, they're the oldest survivor, bro. Like, did they survive? Like, by accident?
I was
bro.
Two, and I don't remember, but I suppose it happened this way. Suppose there was a boat.
That's it for steamboat disasters.
What if I accidentally call this one, like, part 2 of 3?
And then they're going to have to wait for 3, Steve.
Steve's going
to
come up and just invent like his own steamboat disaster like story, like fanfic. We're going on.
He's
going
to go to Savannah and sink that steamboat that drives or that floats down the Savannah River.
I will kill those little. Oh my god! All right, well, I'm going to go take a steamboat to Junotown. So I'll talk to you later.
Later.
Bye.